Hello, this is Bob Kruger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food for October 2010. October is National Apple Month, as this is the peak of the apple season in our country. Some locally grown apples are available at local farmers markets, and all too often the apples found in our supermarket are imported from countries as far away as New Zealand and Chile. We might be able to influence the supermarket buyers to think of North Carolina and Virginia grown apples if we tell the produce people in our local stores we want apples from this part of the country. The fall harvest season brings us a number of fruits and vegetables that are beneficial for a good diet. These include cranberries, which are rich in vitamins and have a high concentration of antioxidants. They may help lower cholesterol, protect cells from cancer, and prevent kidney stones. Choose deep red cranberries, which pack more antioxidants. Chop and use in salads, quick breads, and muffins. And homemade cranberry sauce is far superior to that that comes in cans. Apples are high in fiber, potassium, and flavonoids, powerful disease-fighting antioxidants. One way to serve them is to core the apple, fill the cavity with raisins and shredded coconut and a little cinnamon, and bake until the apple is soft. Pumpkins are great sources of vitamin A and potassium. They also contain carotenoids, which protect the cardiovascular and immune systems and may help reduce the risk for cancer. Create savory soups and pumpkin breads with pumpkins. Roast the seeds for a snack rich in omega-3 fats, which help fight arthritis inflammation. Sweet potatoes are loaded with potassium, fiber, and vitamin A. They're high in carotenoids, which are linked with a reduced risk for cardiovascular disease and some cancers. Try mixing cooked sweet potato with unsweetened applesauce or crushed pineapple. You will notice that all of these items are dark in color. It is widely recognized that the darker the color of a fruit or vegetable, the more healthful, beneficial substances they contain. Greg Hatem, who's made a name for himself renovating dozens of downtown Raleigh buildings and filling them with cafes, restaurants, and bars, is getting into the food processing business. Hatem's latest venture, Empire Foods, will open a food processing facility in Halifax County that's expected to create 200 jobs over the next 5 years. The company will receive state and local incentives worth nearly $2 million if it meets hiring goals. The company will initially focus on selling large packages of fruits and vegetables to hotels, school systems, restaurants, the military, and other institutions. Empire Foods has licensed technology, originally developed at North Carolina State University, that processes food in a way that allows it to retain much of its flavor and nutrients. It's going to be great for our restaurants, Hatem said of this venture. The icing on the cake was being able to do it back in Halifax County, where I'm from. He grew up in Roanoke Rapids and attended NC State University. Along with his real estate business, Empire Properties, Hatem operates a stable of Raleigh restaurants under the Empire Eats name that includes the Raleigh Times, the Duck and the Dumpling, and the Pit. The new company also considered sites in Virginia and Pennsylvania. Michael Drozd is Empire Foods president and CEO, who spent the last 4 years working to commercialize technologies in the food industry through his Raleigh company, Ultra Aseptics. Empire Foods is licensing its food processing technology from Ultra Aseptics. The technology involves rapidly heating and cooling foods such as blueberries or strawberries so that the enzymes that cause food to spoil are neutralized while the flavor and nutrients are retained. It has all the sterility of a can, but it maintains all the good stuff of fresh fruit, Drozd said. Empire Foods will buy fruits and vegetables from local farmers and convert them into purees or toppings that can be put on the shelf for a year without refrigeration. The company expects to have its new facility operating by June. Empire Foods will be the first tenant at the new 700-acre Halifax Corporate Park. Empire Foods will pay average annual wages of $28,418. The Halifax County average is $25,532. We wish this new enterprise much success. In a report from Rome, Italy, a United Nations agency announced that the number of chronically hungry people in the world dipped considerably below the 1 billion mark, the first drop in 15 years. partly due to a fall in food prices. Still, an estimated 925 million people are undernourished worldwide, and the latest figures don't reflect the repercussions from the massive flooding in Pakistan. The Rome-based Food and Agriculture Organization's report suggests some progress in the battle to end hunger, but stressed that the world is far from achieving the UN-promoted Millennium Development Goals of having the proportion of undernourished people from 20% in 1990-92 to 10% in 2015. The report estimated that 98 million fewer hungry people than in 2009, when the figure topped 1 billion. Food prices are still stubbornly high, but we haven't seen the type of behavior, panic buying, that helped feed the speculation and fears of a couple of years ago, said Josetta Sheeran, the executive director of the UN World Food Program. The drop below 1 billion also reflects the progress that China and India have made in feeding their own. Still, those two nations, with their huge populations, account for 40% of the nation's the world's undernourished people. Overall, two-thirds of the chronically undernourished live in China, India, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Pakistan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Ethiopia, the report said. UN officials announcing the figures said that the 1,800 calories per day is considered the minimum energy intake on average. Anyone regularly without that intake would be considered undernourished or chronically hungry. The abbreviation WWJD, What Would Jesus Do, is everywhere these days. Zaki Murphy, a Durham chef, had another she hopes might become just as popular, WWJE. At Trinity United Methodist Church in Raleigh's Oakwood neighborhood, she recently traded members of the congregation to What Would Jesus Eat feast. The meal was intended to give people a taste of what Jews of 2,000 years ago might have eaten. The menu, which included roast chicken with cracked green olives, sautéed onions, leeks, and zucchini, zucchini over a bed of cooked bulgur wheat, and a salad of bitter greens with dried apricots and a pomegranate molasses dressing, which was probably fancier than most of the Jews of that time could have afforded. But it gave this Wednesday night supper, which typically consists of baked lasagna or spaghetti, a biblical cast appropriate for the fall return of weeknight church programming. The Reverend Richard Bryan, the pastor of Trinity, gave a short talk after the meal about the theological significance Jesus attached to breaking bread. To Jesus, it was a way to get to know people he might not have met, Bryan said. To Chef Murphy, a Tar Heel native who ran Zaki's PBQ at 92nd Street and 2nd Avenue, New York, for several years, the Jesus meal was an opportunity to relearn more healthful food ways as well as old-world traditions of hospitality. One of my purposes is to take from the old and modernize it, she said. As she usually does, Murphy offered a cooking class to a group of 9 women and 1 man who volunteered to come early and help her cook. In the past year, Murphy had been taking her ancient Mediterranean meal on the road. It began with a lunch for a Bible study organized by UNC's women's basketball coach, Silver Hatchell, but has grown to include Jesus meals for formerly homeless people living in transitional housing. I expected grasshopper and goat meat, said John Pierce, a member of Trinity, but I could live on this stuff. I ate like a king. I'll admit the menu sounds interesting, to say the least. Before offering her Jesus meal, Murphy consulted 2 Duke University religion professors who had excavated ancient remains in modern-day Israel to help her learn more about the Middle East. Carol and Eric Myers taught her as much about what Jesus would not have eaten. As a practicing Jew, Jesus would have followed the kosher dietary laws that prohibit the eating of pork and shellfish, for example. Neither would he have had a leg of lamb with a salad of greens and goat cheese. Kosher law does not allow mixing meat and dairy products in the same meal. And then there are a list of foods that would have been unknown to the ancient Jews, such as tomatoes, potatoes, and peppers, all foods cultivated first in South America. Although it's likely ancient Jews had knives, they probably didn't use forks and spoons. Lentils and bean dips, for example, were probably scooped up with a piece of flatbread such as pita. That's still the way the people in the Middle East wipe hummus or an eggplant dip called baba ganoush off their plates. Finally, Jesus might have eaten lamb or goat, possibly chicken, but only on special occasions. The average meal would have been legumes, Carol Meyer said. Animal protein was not a normal part of the diet. That said, the list of ancient foods was pretty varied. It included staples such as fish, especially tilapia, as well as sardines. Spices such as rosemary and cumin were likely available. And of course, the ancient Jews ate figs and dates, long cultivated in Israel. For dessert, Murphy served trays of melons and grapes, as well as honey-sweetened sesame seed balls and cookies. Coffee and tea were unknown to the ancient Mediterranean people. One beverage they had plenty of was wine, and most likely watered down, Carol Meyer said. Murphy served sparkling grape juice instead. For most Trinity members, the meal was a pleasant surprise. All I knew was that they had unleavened bread, said Eloise Betts, a church member. I didn't know they ate like this. Response to the Jesus feast had been so positive, Murphy now wants to venture out in new ways. She's already planning a St. Francis vegetarian meal for the Italian Saints feast day on October the 4th, and a prodigal son returns meal that can be tailored to returning servicemen. Kathleen Purvis, the food editor of the Charlotte Observer, and Andrea Weigel, the food editor of the News and Observer, polled folks on where they like to go to get a good meal or a food specialty. They stated, earlier this summer we put together the Tar Heel 25, our picks for places and plates that ought to be on your must-eat list. We used our own experiences plus advice from dedicated traveler eaters to turn out classic North Carolina taste. We suggested everything from Ocracoke fig cake to the pork chop sandwich at the Snappy Lunch in Mount Airy. When we threw it open to our readers and asked for advice, what had we missed? We can't share all of the suggestions. Comments were well over 100. But as we went through the list, we came up with 10 more great North Carolina food moments. And if you're hitting the road this fall, keep them in mind. I will not attempt to list all of the items, but will share with you some that are close to the Triangle area. The grits souffle at the Magnolia Glen at 1002 9th Street in Durham. North Carolina barbecue at Wilbur's in Goldsboro. For dessert, try the honeysuckle sorbet at Crook's Corner at 610 Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. Another stop on the road to Sweet Things is the North Carolina State's ice cream next to the Hobbies and Craft Building at the North Carolina State Fair at 1025 Blue Ridge Road in Raleigh. Have you tried a chili dog at the Roast Grill at 7 South West Street in Raleigh? Have you ever had a chance to try warm pecan pie at Mama Dips at 408 West Rosemary Street in Chapel Hill? And there's nothing so great as a warm Moravian sugar cake baked as they did centuries ago at Winkler's Bakery in the old Salem region of Winston-Salem. I've been fortunate enough to have tried some of these taste treats. Name a snack food that's orange in color and makes a loud crunch when it's munched. If you pick Cheetos, the nation's biggest producer of baby carrots wants you to think again. Just in time for the battle over what's going to be in millions of back-to-school lunches, Bolt House Farms and nearly 50 other carrot growers unveiled plans for the industry's first marketing campaign. The $25 million effort sets its sights on a giant, big-spending rival, junk food. The $1 billion baby carrot world, hit by recession following years of growth, is taking on the $18 billion salty snack food industry by trying to beat it at its own hip marketing game. Imagine baby carrots packed in Dorito-like bags. Three different designs are planned, and to be sold out of cool school vending machines. Testing is going on in Cincinnati and Syracuse, New York. Imagine a billboard with the slogan, "The original Orange Doodles." They plan to air ads that tout baby carrots as extreme, futuristic, and even sexy. It's not an anti-junk food campaign, said Jeff Dunn, Bolt House Farm CEO and a former North American president at Coca-Cola. It takes a page out of junk food's playbook and applies it to baby carrots. Agency behind the campaign is Crispin Porter Bogeski, is known for the outside-the-box concepts. It created Burger King's viral marketing hit Subversive Chicken in the anti-smoking campaign, thetruth.com. Carrots don't have all the news that junk food comes with, said Tiffany Rolfe, a group creative director at Crispin. So Crispin's job is to create news. Ad psychologist Carol Mung says if kids may be disappointed to find that all of the flashy ads are really just for carrots, she said they need to make carrots more fun, like making an orange but natural dusting on the carrots that mimics Cheetos. Consultant Kate Newland says she wants to like the idea. She loves the fact that carrots are the color of Cheetos and makes the crunch of Doritos, but she says she's not quite buying the premise of carrots mimicking junk food. The guild is missing, says Newland, author of Passion Brands. I don't think Frito-Lay will be trembling. Frito-Lay is in fact, crowing. We're happy to serve as an inspiration, Chris spokesman Chris Kuchenmeister said. We know people don't eat enough fruits and vegetables, and we applaud any effort to get consumers with a wider range of snacking options. Stores will carry newly packaging in crinkly, festive bags reminiscent of chip bags with designs that mimic the ads. The Carrot Group and its agency studied other campaigns such as the Drink Milk effort and decided to push further with baby carrots beyond marketing them for their health benefits. Let me know when you first find some of the new packages on the market. In late May, a report from the North Carolina Division of Marine Fisheries revealed that the landings of commercial seafood dropped last year in North Carolina, as a larger fish catch couldn't make up for declines in shrimp and crabs. Commercial fishermen landed 68.6 million pounds in 2009, about 4% less than the year before. The value of the commercial catch dropped 11% to $77 million. The most notable decline was in the shrimp harvest, down 43% to 5.4 million pounds. State officials says weather, marketing conditions, and gasoline prices were all factors. The landing of finfish increased 17%, led by larger catches of spiny dogfish, and this must be marketed under another name, and bluefish. Blue crab continues to top the list of commercial seafood landed in the state at 28.8 pounds. As wild seafood declines, more seafoods of various kinds is being farm-raised. An effort to win federal approval of genetically engineered salmon received a boost in early September when the Food and Drug Administration released an analysis that deemed the fish safe to eat and unlikely to hurt the environment. Aqua Bonte Technologies of Waltham, Massachusetts, has invested more than 14 years and nearly $60 million developing and seeking approval of its Aqua Advantage salmon. The company says its fish look and taste like the non-engineered North Atlantic salmon, consume about as much as 25% less food, and reach the market in half the time. If approved, the fish would be the nation's first commercially produced genetically engineered animal for food. This is the culmination of a long and very deliberate process, Aqua Bounty Chief Executive Officer Roland Stodish said. We're pleased that the process is moving forward. The analysis found the fish to be as safe as food from conventional Atlantic salmon. The FDA's Veterinary Medicine Advisory Committee will hold public meetings September 19th to 20th to review the analysis. One point of controversy has to do with the potential for crossbreeding with wild salmon, an issue that's been of great concern to some environmental and food safety advocates, but deemed unlikely in the FDA's analysis. Part of the two-day hearing will focus on labeling of the fish. It is possible that if the modified salmon is approved, customers would not even know they were eating it. Current FDA regulations only require modified foods to be labeled as such if the food is substantially different from the conventional version, and the agency has said that the modified salmon is essentially the same as Atlantic salmon. Aqua Bounty submitted its first application for the FDA approval in 1995, but the FDA did not decide until 2 years ago to consider applications for genetically engineered animal, a move seen as a breakthrough by the biotechnology industry. The company said it intends to sell the genetically altered eggs, which would be engineered to produce sterile females to producers who would be required to raise them inland to prevent the salmon from escaping into the wild. As egg production and outgrow facilities, the risk that the fish might escape is extremely small due to the presence of multiple independent forms of physical, mechanical containment at both facilities, the FDA analysis said. One of the concerns of those opposed to this new salmon is the possibility of danger of allergies that might occur after eating this new product. Many food purists object to many new forms of food that has reached the market or are trying to get established, as in this case of Aqua Bounty. I have no idea who is right, but if offered a chance to try a piece of the salmon, I certainly would. And this concern about fish and its stoppages, Whole Foods Market is trying to clear some murky waters for seafood shoppers. The grocery chain launched a new coded rating program with the help of a Monterey Aquarium and Blue Ocean Institute that measures the environmental impact of its wild-caught seafood. This program is the latest of a series of steps by major grocers to change seafood policies as concerns rise about overfishing and environmental effects of certain fishing methods. Seafood is given a green, yellow, or red rating. Green indicates the species is relatively abundant and is caught in environmentally friendly ways. Yellow means some concerns about the species status or the methods by which it is caught. And a red rating means the species is suffering from overfishing or the method used to catch it harms other marine life or habitats. The company, based in Austin, Texas, said that it is the first natural retailer to display such ratings. Whole Foods said the program complements its wild-caught rating program with the Marine Stewardship Council, a certification program that addresses only the fraction of seafood sold, and it adds to the grocers' farm seafood policies, which prohibit antibiotics and sulfates and sets other standards. There has been a huge increase in the attention and energy and enthusiasm on sustainable seafood from customers, buyers, and fishermen, said Carrie Brownstein, the coordinator of seafood quality standards for Whole Foods. Target stores decided at the beginning of this year to stop carrying farm-raised salmon. Safeway stopped carrying overfished species, including grouper and monkfish. A number of chains, including Wegmans and Aldi's, had come up with new sustainable seafood policies. Retail giant Walmart Foods dropped swordfish, shark, and frozen orange roughy last year after previously cutting other controversial species. And after much pressure from environmental groups, Trader Joe's announced this spring it would sell only sustainable source seafood by the end of 2012. Whole Foods also announced it will end sales of red-rated species by Earth Day 2013. The company has already phased out a number of such products. Wildlife and seafood advocates say that these measures are crucial because half of the seafood purchased in the United States come from retailers. The industry has changed very rapidly, says Mike Sutton, president of Monterey Bay Aquarium. And when the consumer starts to care, it is the enlightened self-interest to care. Monterey Bay Aquarium, considered a preeminent authority on seafood sustainability, developed pocket guides and cards that help consumers navigate the fish counter. It's been distributed over 40 million of these guides and similar cards over the past 10 years. Navigating the seafood system is hard for shoppers because it involves assessing the type of seafood, where it is fished, the method used, and other specifics of the fisheries or farms. Sutton says moves like this by major retailers and its partnership with food suppliers such as Aramac and Compass Group can help make a significant impact. You can't buy seafood, it isn't being sold, he said. Does this sound like you when making dinner? You come up with a main course, usually a meat. You pick a starch, potatoes, rice, or pasta. And at the last minute, you realize you need a side dish. So you dump frozen peas or broccoli into boiling water, or you toss bagged salad into a bowl. If your aim is healthful, balanced, and affordable, you may have missed a big opportunity. Again, diets see you do it. Dietitians see you do it. And when they have clients keep food logs, they often see no food or vegetables listed, and that missed nutrition isn't being made up at night. We tend to think in food groups, said Elizabeth Politi, the nutrition director at Duke's Diet and Fitness Center in Durham. Tonight I'm going to have chicken. I'm going to have pasta. It shows that people don't think too much in terms of balance. Melissa Herman Dirks, a registered dietitian and diabetes educator in Huntersville, North Carolina, tells clients to aim for 2.5 cups of vegetables and at least 1 piece of fruit a day, with a cup being the size of a light bulb. Politi suggests more, 2.5 cups of vegetables for adult women and 3 cups for men, plus 2 cups of fruit a day. That doesn't sound so hard, does it? Brace yourself. The U.S. Centers of Disease Control released a report September the 10th that looked at food and vegetable consumption by state. Not one state did well in meeting the goal of eating vegetables 3 times a day and fruit 2x a day. In the Carolinas, we didn't meet the goal and were falling further behind. Only 25% of the people in North Carolina ate 2 or more daily servings of fruit in 2009, down from 28% in 2000. Over 27.5% ate vegetables 3 or more times, down from 32% in 2000. In South Carolina, 23% of the people had fruit 2x a day and vegetable 3 times a day. A lot of people skip breakfast or get a sausage biscuit, Dirk said. At lunch, it's fast food, Chinese, or pizza. By the time we get to dinner, it's our last chance. Eating bagged celery or frozen broccoli every night is a start, but you're still missing something important, variety. The bigger the variety that you eat, the bigger variety of vitamins and minerals you're going to get, she says. It can be expensive to keep fresh fruits and vegetables around. Aim for a variety is great, but you want to be watchful of waste, Paletti says. People stop buying if they think they're throwing food away, but there are ways to keep fruit and vegetables affordable and convenient. Both Dirks and Paletti stress the importance of meal planning. Emphasizing side dishes can help you plan what to buy at the grocery store. Fresh is great, but there's nothing wrong with stopping up on frozen and canned items. They last longer, and they're on hand when you need them. If you plan, you can stock up on these items when they're on sale. With an eye toward affordability, variety, and speed, dig out some of those recipes you haven't used for a long time. All of them use things that are easy to add to your grocery list. People who spend at least 20 minutes planning the grocery list eat healthier, Dirk said. Get those foods in the house, otherwise you're not going to eat them. And here is another positive suggestion on the wisdom of the shopping list. Early in September, a press release tells us that the Butterball has a new owner. Maxwell Farms, which owned 51% of the world's largest turkey company, announced that it was partnering with Seaboard Corporation of Kansas to purchase the minority 49% share now owned by Murphy Brown, a subsidiary of Smithfield Foods, and the purchase is expected to be final in December. Until next month, this has been Bob Kruger with Thought for Food. We've run out of time for today's episode, and we want to be sure to listen at next month, and we're hoping you have enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Thank you.